Okay, so then now we're continuing with ordinances of studentship. Right, because in the middle, then we brought in the position of the acharya and had a respectful behavior towards gurus. Right, so now we go back to the previous topic of topic three. Duties of a brahmachari. But a student who resides with a teacher must observe the following restrictive rules, duly controlling all his organs in order to increase his spiritual merit. Every day, having bathed, being purified, he must worship the deities and place fuel on the sacred fire. Right? So whenever we mention sacred fire here, it means sacrifice. So that would be whatever is the sacrifice. So it means something connected with the preaching mission. Let him abstain from meat, perfumes, women, all substances turned acid, and from doing injury to living creatures. And so then here when it says, because women will come up twice here. So this one means, when he says avoid women, means abstain from women, means sexual relationships. And all those things turn sour means things that are not naturally sour. Like yogurt is naturally sour. But now if the yogurt turns more sour, then it should be avoided. Because things that are too sour, they make the semen thin. And when the semen's thin, it tends to not stay in the body. Right? That makes sense. Applying cudgel to his eyes from sensual desire, anger, and covetousness. From gambling, idle disputes, backbiting and lying, from looking at and touching women, and from hurting others. Right? So here women means now looking at, touching. So looking doesn't mean seeing. Looking means observing to find if there is some attribute that one appreciates for enjoying. Does that make sense? Right? So that's in line with what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur uses in Brahma Samhita about the materialist, the sensual gaze of inspection. Right, so that means you're inspecting to see what you could gain from it, but seeing to see what is the connection to Krishna, then that's not a problem. Does that make sense? So here, seeing means looking with an idea of for one's own, enjoyment. Let him always sleep alone. Let him never waste his manhood. For he who voluntarily wastes his manhood breaks his vow. So. Yeah, so those are the basic rules of brahmacharya, right? So you're saying, so that's it, you know, that you've gone from 75 to 80, so five rules. That's what I'm saying? Basically, we'll get another couple of pages, and the whole rest of the book is about grihasthas. So that's what we were meaning before, is because if it's just men alone, there's very little that is necessary to keep things working, right? And we see even a lot of the things here are connected with women. Right? Why would you wear perfumes? Right? Men don't really worry about that stuff. Right? They're naturally perfumed, you could say. Then applying cudgel to the eyes, sensual desire, anger comes after frustration from not getting that. Gambling, if you don't need money, why would you gamble? Backbiting. Yeah. So you understand. So even much of the rules is even in connection with women, or those who would be there. If you were connected with them, you would need those things. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's the whole idea. Because when you're dealing with one group, it's pretty simple. But when you mix the groups, that's where it gets complicated. Does that make sense? Even the rules women to women are pretty simple, right? Men to men are simple, but men to women to men, that's where it gets complicated. And because you have, yeah.
What about the brothers, sisters?
Pretty straightforward also, you know. It's just, means if they're older, whoever's older, if they're of equal age, then they'd be more like friends, and if one's, whoever's older, younger, would be like parent or child. You know, in other words, the older sister, brother takes care of the younger like the parents would. And the younger, you know, are obedient to the older like they would to the parents. It doesn't have that formality because they're siblings, but it still has that element. Does that make sense? Is that all right?
It says that they should sleep alone, and then I'm wondering if they're sharing a room.
Alone means in the same bed.
Okay.
You know, like that. Okay. Let him fetch a pot full of water, flowers, cow dung, earth, and kusa grass, as much as may be required by his teacher, and daily go to beg food. Right? In other words, what things are used in the ashram, what's necessary for the running of the ashram, that's what he collects. Right? So it's very natural that the brahmacharis are going out and collecting what makes the ashram run. Does that make sense? But it's only running the ashram. Right? It's not running beyond that. Yeah, does that make sense? Beyond that, let's say you want to build a big temple. If the brahmacharis can do it, great. But the temple is necessary not for the brahmacharis, but for the community. So then the community should get that together. But the brahmacharis, then they naturally maintain what it is that they're using. So the temple worship, the what the brahmacharis are eating, the facilities they use, these things naturally then they would take care of. A student being pure shall daily bring food from the houses of men who are not deficient in the knowledge of the Veda and in performing sacrifices, and who are famous for following their lawful occupation. So your natural place of donations and things are from people who actually understand the process, right? Who understand devotional service, therefore they're giving. So that kind of donation, it's clean. It doesn't carry any problems like that. But from others like that, it says, let him not beg from the relatives of his teacher, nor from his own mother's blood relations. But if there are no houses belonging to strangers, let him go to one of those named above, taking the last named first. Right? So in other words, that if there's no strangers, then he could beg from his mother's relations, blood relations, and then, if not, then from the relatives of the teacher. But otherwise, ideally, you know, one would stick outside of that, because then one's not being maintained by the teacher, his facilities, or by the parents, right? Especially on the mother's side, because then the tradition is nothing is taken by the men of the family. They don't take anything from the women's side of the family. The husband doesn't take things from that side. If they give gifts to him personally, that's okay, but he's not taken care of by them. Right, the boys' side of the family, you know, can receive gifts there and like that, but they're not maintained by. They maintain themselves at the same time as, you know, they'll maintain the girl, but they don't, generally speaking, accept that. Well, they say actually, may give some personal gifts to the boy, but the rest of the family generally doesn't accept anything. Because there's always, at least in, you know, many of the cultured families, is the element is that the girl has been given to the boy, and so there's nothing that they would be, how you say, there's no payment of anything. So one is very, very careful is that when dealing there, then one doesn't... Some will be very careful that, well, let's say if they go to the relative's house, like let's say they send their servant to do something, and he's there, and they'll naturally feed him and all that. Before he leaves, he'll leave some money. So it doesn't look like they're taking anything, because they don't want it to look like, okay, it's a business deal, like that. They're very careful on this. Much of the world uses the opposite, is that to get the girl, you have to pay, you know, like that. But that's to... That process works for those who, if you weren't getting money for your daughter, they would tend to bury them in the sand. Yes.
Concerning the duties of a brahmachari, if there is a restaurant connected to the temple,
can you beg from that?
No. Is it then illegal for the temple president to require that the brahmacharis do some service in the restaurant?
The point is what's the restaurant for? You know what I'm saying? If the restaurant is the temple restaurant, then the proceeds from that, you're distributing prasad and the proceeds are going to the temple. Like that. If it's his private business, then you'd have to see basically how much he's involved in the life of the brahmacharis or not. If he's not, then better he doesn't. If he very much is, then it's part of doing service. Then yes, it's you'd have to look at it very carefully. Is that okay? Yeah, so it's not a problem if he is, but at the same time, as you just have to see what's the situation. Anything that's connected to the temple, they can be involved in. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Or, if there are no virtuous men of the kind mentioned above, he may go to each house in the village, being pure and remaining silent. But let him avoid abhishtas, those accused of mortal sin. Right? So in other words, if he's going to these others where the people are, you know, studied in the Veda, practicing and all that, then when he goes to the house, he may interact with them, talk with them, and like this. But if there's no such persons, then he'll just go door to door. It means he doesn't pick out ones, he just goes door to door. And then he just, you know, says, you know, ask for charity, and that's all. He doesn't get into big, if they talk, you know, you're pleasant, but you're not closely interacting like that. And then if those are accused of mortal sin, that would mean adultery, physical violence. What are the big five? Oh, he's probably talking here. Killing of a Brahmin, sleeping with the wife of the guru, stealing from a Brahmin, and associating with those who do these things, like that. Then you would avoid their house, if you know. If you don't know, that's another thing, but if you know, you would avoid. Because the volume of sin that their charity carries is not worthwhile. Like when Prabhupada was in Africa, then there's a family there, very, very wealthy. I think they may have even given the facilities to stay at one point, but they gave a donation. But their business, why they're so wealthy, is they had distilleries. They'd sell alcohol, right? That was their business. So Prabhupada accepted the donation, but wouldn't keep it for himself. He immediately gave it to the put it in the deity's box. Because then it goes to the deity. But, you know, things that were from proper sources, then he would keep that, and then he would use that for different projects within the society. Like the MVT in Vrindavan, like that. That's from the money that was in Prabhupada's account. Like that. Yes. You share some of your karma. It means you already do. You're born in their family. So what's the point?
Well, this is an example that once Ravananda Maharaj was in Finland and we went to one preaching engagement and he was having prasadam at the house of one sort of congregational member, but he noticed in his bookshelf there were some questionable DVDs, and immediately he stopped eating and he just sent it the whole day.
Okay, it means you can do that. It means as long as that works for you. But the point is that you've accepted to eat and then you just stop eating, unless you just look like you ate less. But the point is you're there and they're trying to do something. So then is there, that aspect is there. But yes, anything that you accept that you don't pay for, you take karma. If you pay, you only take consciousness. So that's the way it works. So you have to see what would be the balance. But questionable DVDs, it's questionable why anybody would be in the material world. That's the first point. Right? Second would be, it's questionable that they're not, you know, a full-time, you know, initiated devotee and practicing and all that. So the point is that it's understood that there may be something there, but that's not the point that would distract one. In other words, they're very interested. If they take up the process, they chant, then it's just a matter of time before these things become reduced. Right? But if you can be able to pick those who are following more nicely than those who are not, then that, you know, that would be the choice. But as you see here, it's practical. First you go to those who are properly educated, properly practicing. If not, then you go to, you know, strangers and you avoid here. But that's not mortal sin. You understand? Mortal sin means you killed a Brahmin. That's a mortal sin. Not that you have a DVD. You understand? That's not a mortal sin. It may be not good, but it's not a mortal sin. That makes sense? But you're trying to catch this thing that there's this gradation. That's what we opened the class with. You're trying to catch this. It's not that the sin is the thing you're looking for. No, you're trying to cultivate the devotion. It's not that you're not careful of that, but it's just like when you walk in the street, is the whole point of walking in the street is to avoid stepping in the mud puddles. It means whatever you do when you go out on the street, you always have to avoid the mud puddles. You just have to stay out of the way of the mud. The worst thing in the world you could do is step in a mud puddle. So when you're walking down the street, make sure that you don't step in any mud puddles. And that means both feet, right? It means that even 1 foot at a time. You just watch out for the mud puddles. So would that be a proper presentation of the view of someone walking down the street? No. So that's the problem when we get too much into the sin and the this and the that and... You know what I'm saying? We're aware of it. Like we're aware of a mud puddle. When it comes, we walk around it. But we don't sit there thinking, it's a mud puddle, and look around the corner, is there a mud puddle?
That's Christianity.
Yeah. So that's the whole point, is that it's not that it's sin because they have a video host of that. Like this is, no, it's just this. Their grihasthas are working on things that a brahmachari doesn't necessarily have to, but because they're working on that, that doesn't mean that that's their problem. The brahmacharis have theirs. You know what I'm saying? Everybody has what they have to work with. So it's not that... The point is a brahmachari, the reason he's not married is not because it's so terrible and disgusting. It's because he doesn't need it. Right? Just like, let's say, you're taking Bishad, okay? And you're full. You've had enough. It was nice Bishad. And then 5 minutes later, some other brahmacharis come in and sit down to take Bishad. So now, should they serve you also? No, why not?
Because I don't need anything.
You don't need anything. Or is it because the prasad is absolutely disgusting and you wouldn't want to eat it and all this and it's nonsense to eat the food? So we shouldn't have that attitude towards the grihasthas. Because then if we do, that signifies just it's the other side of why they're married. You know, saying the reason to not get married is not because women are terrible, it's because you don't need to associate with women. That's all. If you don't need to eat, you don't eat. If you're hungry, you eat. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? If you're already full, you don't need to eat. So by eating, that would be wrong. Right? And by not eating, that would be service. But for the person who's hungry, to not eat, that wouldn't be service. To eat, that would be service. So that's how one remains a brahmachari. There's not some other tricks, you know. So a certain way you grit your teeth so that, you know, that makes the brahmachari better or something like that. And then how do you talk on Sankirtan when you, oh, I have a cheese cut? You know, but because you like that, some, they think you're weird. So, you know, can we stick a toothpick there and then it'll look cool and they'll just think we're something out of the 50s or something. Yeah, should we also wear a hat, you know, go along with the thing, you know. You know what I'm saying? So that's not what makes a brahmachari. So that's not how you view it. It's saying here that these things are done, but it's just a natural course. It's not that here's the thing, that's it, oh, you know, like that. No, then you miss the point. That's why I opened the class with principle. Because up to now, we haven't gotten into anything that we're not used to. But as we go from here, it goes more and more like this. You know what I'm saying? So we have to catch the principle. The principle is you always start out with what's the best, and then you take the second best, then third best, then fourth best, then fifth best. But if first best is available, you'll take it. You know, not like in the modern that, well, there are people who are falling, you know, 10th class, so therefore that's as good as it gets. So no, but if first class is available, they won't take it. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Like just like we were saying, there's the vegans. They won't take milk products because of how they deal with cows and all that in the, you know, dairy industry, right? But now, if we had some milk from our farm taken by our own cows and you offered it to the vegans, there's a good chance that most of them wouldn't take it. Because it's not specifically that. That's just an issue. It's just they're against anything to do with cows. So ultimately means they actually even don't like the cows. It's just that they're violent to the cows, not that they care about cows. They don't like violence. So the cows don't actually matter. So, you know what I'm saying? So you have to avoid that. You have to be careful. Yes?
It is said that your Brahmacharya and every man is supposed to see the woman as mother. Is there such kind of a relation, like, you know, like brothers and sisters and friends and like that in the
Vedic? One's very careful. One's careful. Because the thing is the mind tends to, if the relationship is strong, then that's one thing. But the mind is very clever because the mind's connected to the senses, like that. And relationship is based on engaging the senses, but the engagement is based on intelligence. So one always has to be very, very careful that the view is always coming through intelligence and not just the mind. So that's the thing. So friend, it means you do have elements of friendship, like Krishna's gopis are friends with Balaram, and Balaram's gopis are friends with Krishna. But that doesn't mean, but the friendship still has a formality. Does that make sense? Like that. So one always has to be careful of, like that. You know? Yeah, so the more natural the culture, the background of culture, then the more natural that'll be. You know, and the less that's there, then it's not, it has problems. Yes.
So Maharaj, I'm sometimes distributing and also sometimes directly asking donations from Indian and Nepalese restaurants.
Indian and Nepalese restaurants.
Yeah.
So you want to know if you put it in your pocket, will it burn a hole? Where's the money going?
Temple.
Yeah, so then you don't have to worry about it. Right? Yes?
The sensual gaze for inspection, isn't that also for grihasthas?
Yeah, it's for everybody. I mean, that'll get down to it. When it talks about the rules of associating with women, the strong rules are about grihasthas themselves. We tend to think that when somebody's married, then they can talk to anybody and sit with anybody. But when it defines adultery, it's defining grihasthas with other grihasthas. You know, because generally brahmacharis won't be sitting around with ladies talking all day. Like that. But yeah, no, it includes everybody.
So we are sometimes invited to do
Yeah.
But somewhere under there, favorably, for a moment,
yeah.
We allow, we can chant Hare Krishna in the mantras, you know, and we can give a speech, and we are allowed to do some preaching there.
Mm-hmm.
So, how is that? They also give dakshin on that.
Yeah, so those kind of things should go to the temple. Like that means, are you doing the ritual, or you're doing the marriage ceremony itself, or you're just attending the marriage?
No.
Yeah, no, that's nice. But I'm just saying, generally, those things you should be careful, and those should go to the temple. Like that. But at the same time, as if you have a grihastha who's performing the ceremony, who's the priest, the temple should then give them a dakshin. Like that. Because the normal thing is what they give a dakshin that goes to the priest. Right? And so then in this way you would want to see that they get something, but you would want to run it through the temple. You know, if they're initiated devotees in this, that you don't necessarily have to do that. Does that make sense? If the temple's arranging it, then it goes to the temple. But if the individual themselves, he does some scars for the community, it doesn't have to run through the temple. That's what he does. No, I said.
They come to us like they know. Okay, this person, they do this, and then so I do it sometimes.
Yeah, but you're doing it from the temple. They're approaching the temple. I'm talking about you may have a big community where they're not approaching the temple. They're approaching an individual person who knows how to do the samskars, and they're inviting them to do these samskars for them. So what we're saying is if there's somebody, if they're, you know, practicing devotees, then that devotee could keep that dakshin. If it's not, you know, then it's better it goes to the temple, because if they're, you know, if the background, the money is not clean, it's not pure. Does that make sense? And if the temple is arranging these things, the Brahmin who does it is supposed to get a dakshin. So then they should make sure. If it's a brahmachari who's doing it, then you don't worry about it, because he does things for the temple anyway, so the temple gets everything. But if they're not, if they're a grihastha, the temple should give them something, because they're doing it. It's not a matter of this, it all, you know, this simplistic, it all just goes to the temple. Like that, because there is the culture, there's the etiquette of Brahmins get charity. Does that make sense? Yeah. So you have those various kind of like instances. But if they're approaching you as the temple, then yeah, and then it goes to the temple. Like that. You know, if they embed it, yeah, like I said. Because here it's just a question of the quality of the person that you're begging from is what is carried in the what's carried in the money, you know, the consciousness and everything. Does that make sense? We had one, we were seeing one Indian music teacher. And then, you know, he would be various lessons, so we'd give him money for that. And he at one point had mentioned how he likes taking money from me because, you know the lifestyle and that, so the money's clean. He doesn't have to worry about the background because he was a Brahmin himself. You know, so then. Does that make sense? You know, so you, that will always be seen. So what's the source of the money? Having brought sacred fuel from a distance, let him place it anywhere but on the ground, and let him unwearied make it with burnt oblations onto the sacred fire, both evening and morning. So from a distance, don't just take from all the different trees that are right there in the ashram, or, you know, you break all the trees in that. It should be from a distance, because at a distance, in the forest, things naturally fall off the trees. You don't have to cut trees. They're always dropping. But if you take it from close, after that, then you're going to have to start cutting branches. So you always take it a distance where it's not a disturbance to anything. It's just, it's left there. Then place it anywhere but on the ground, because it's the food for the sacrifice. So it doesn't go on the ground, just like you don't put boga on the ground. So you don't put the wood for the sacrifice directly on the ground. And then unwearied means he shouldn't get tired to preach. You know, what is his regular preaching, you know, or what is his regular duties, that should go on. Right? If there's extra duties, like a marathon, you might get tired from that. But your regular duties, you know, that should go on, how you say, unwearied, you know? Your chanting of your japa and your other duties and that. It shouldn't be that I'm tired of chanting japa, you know, I'd like a break from chanting japa. No, you always do that. He who performs the vow of studentship shall constantly subsist on alms, but not eat the food of one person only. Subsistence of a student on begged food is declared to be equal in merit to fasting. Right? So the student who's living on that which is begged, or which he's not, you know, means he's gaining, but then it's given to the spiritual master, because we saw before in the initiation, right, he begs and then it's given to the spiritual master. So brahmachari, you know, collects whatever he does, it's given to the temple. So when the food that he eats that's provided, therefore, in this case, by the temple, that's as good as fasting. Right? So you can eat as much as you want, and it's still fasting. Does that mean on the Ekadasi, then? Yeah, we want to avoid those ones. Okay. Nirjala, you're not supposed to eat or drink, but the temple provided it, so does that mean it's... Okay, right? Don't do that. Etiquette with the teacher. Both when ordered by his teacher and without a special command, a student shall always exert himself in studying the Veda and in doing what is serviceable to the teacher. Right, so when the teacher says to do it, and even when he doesn't, he should always be engaged in service and studying, right? Because it's not that every time the teacher has to sit there and says, okay, now move the broom. Yeah, now pick it up. Now move it back. Now put it down again. Now move it forward again. No, it's just he tells you, you're supposed to clean this every day. So he doesn't have to come every day and tell you. You do it. You know, right? Controlling his body, his speech, his organs of sense, and his mind, let him stand with joined hands looking at the face of his teacher, right? So you're not looking somewhere else, right? It means you're looking at the face of the teacher. Because you speak, you see the face, right? You know, you also hear better if you see. Let him always keep his right arm uncovered, behave decently, and keep his body well covered. And when he is addressed with the words, be seated, he shall sit down facing his teacher. Right. So this is where the right arm uncovered comes from. It's because in front of the teacher, cows, assembly of Vaishnavas, you know, like that, deities, then the right arm is to be uncovered. That's the tradition. Like that. It's a element of submission. Also is that you can do something. Your arm's free. This arm you can't do as much with. Like you offer artik, arms free. So all these others get in the way. And a brahmachari traditionally won't wear sewn cloth and all those things because sewn cloth indicates householders and that because they have, you know, the women will do the sewing and stuff like that. So then generally that wouldn't be worn. For preaching, one may be wearing shirts and stuff like that, but you don't wear them when you're doing artik or doing, you know, these kind of functions. So that's the... Does that make sense? Yeah. I mean, means you mean up to the navel or down to the? What do you mean by the navel? So if you just cover the navel, then are you dressed? Up to the navel, yeah, that's generally considered proper. So he just says well covered means he's dressed properly for the situation. Like if he's just with brahmacharis, you know, sitting in the ashram, then that's another thing. But when one's out, then he's always nicely covered. Like that. Yes.
I have a question about the sewn clothes because it said that also one should not enter the altar with like stitched clothes. So it's also from Grihasthas and then of course ladies always going to be have to have stitched clothes or sewn clothes. How is it?
It's just a matter of is. I say for the men, then that would be practiced, and for the women, then it's you know whatever is the, you know, basic. That is necessary to be sewn, then that's what's worn. You know what I'm saying? Because it's also a matter of how it's worn. Previously, if you look at like in South India and in Bengal, where the main culture is Brahminical, their saris are much longer. Like we're wearing what's called the Nivi sari, which is a informal sari that was worn, a style of sari that was worn by the Rajasthani princesses, you know, the women of the palace. When it's not a formal occasion, because when it's formal, they'd wear these gagras that the dress itself has 50 meters of cloth in it, like that. So this was just for hanging out, you know, but it would look nice. So it's become somehow or another, it's caught on because it was worn by the nobility and it's relaxed enough. So that's basically what you see in North India is worn. But in the cultures where the Brahminical element, then it's much more. Bengal, you have 5 meters of cloth. These are four, so there'll be five. And then five means it'll go across the front twice, like that. That doesn't mean the palu here. It means the whole thing will go twice. In South, it'll be the same. So it'll be, generally it's put on like a dhoti, and then it goes around like how you wear the sari now. And then it'll go over and then over again. The difference is the Bengalis will put, the first time it goes over will go over the head, and then the second time goes over the shoulder. While in the South, the first time will go over the shoulder, the second time then will go over the head when it comes back like this. So the South will look like this on the top, but actually underneath it's like the Bengali. So that way, they didn't wear sewn cloth. You know what I'm saying? So they're very expert at it. But unless you're very expert, I wouldn't advise it.
Like, was the scriptural meaning that the...
Because sewn cloth where it's sewn, because it's folded and all that dirt will collect in there, so it won't be as clean. Like that. Like even by tradition, when you're wearing the unsewn cloth, the pujaris would use unbleached cloth. So that's why it's that kind of like more of a yellowish color. Because that's considered more pure, because that's in its natural state. So they would wear unsewn, unbleached cloth. So that would be traditional. So the women also, like if you ever seen that movie, what is it? I think Nadia Nimai or...
Nadia.
Like that, or whatever you... Like that. Look carefully in there. The Brahmin women aren't wearing sewn cloth. No one's wearing a choli. But you won't see anything. So you'll see less with them not wearing a choli than the ladies now that do wear them. You know what I'm saying? So it's just, they knew how to wear cloth, how to carry themselves. Because you always have to stand straight. You know, like that. Because if you're straight, then the cloth hangs nice. Right? There's no gaps. If you lean forward, there's gaps. Like that. So they know how to. That makes sense. Gopi dresses.
And also, like, because in Nectar and Devotion, Srila Prabhupada states that one should not wear red and blue in the deity room or temple room. And then, of course, like, it has been extended for men, it means that red is for Shaktas and blue is like...
Yeah, red means that.
Yeah. And then how does it apply to the ladies? Because basically...
But do you wear that? Plain red. You wear plain red. Absolutely plain. No borders, no palu, no nothing. Okay, so is that a blue sari?
Well, we had some visiting preachers in Czech who said that this is exactly a blue sari and this is a dark sari, which is also like tamasic.
Yeah, but the thing is it's like, are they Indian?
No.
So then they don't know what they're talking about. Blue means it's that particular sham blue, and that's the whole thing. Like the end over there, that's yellow. It's a mustard. Yeah, so the whole point is it's... It's not blue. One won't take it that it's that kind of a blue. Red means that. Otherwise, that's what I'm saying. What about the question? Then we just take the whole thing here. We ate, we took prasad on the floor here. And then contamination spreads by touch. So then the floor is there. Then that means the walls are contaminated. The ceiling, that means actually the whole building. The building, that means the grounds outside. When we take prasad, the whole of Finland, you know, becomes contaminated. And that's including also Sweden and Norway, you know. So how do we purify this? You know what I'm saying? So that's what we want to avoid. That's why we open this way, because otherwise the mind, the Western mind, just gets, it has this expertise on detailed contemplation on absolutely useless facets of Krishna consciousness, right? Red, we don't wear red because that's what the Shaktas wear. But the point is, have you ever, you've been to Vrindavan?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a female Shakta with the matted hair and the bright red cloth and that's all she's wearing? Have you seen that? Anybody seen it? No? I've seen it. They're rare.
South India?
No. They might wander around there, but generally... Those kind of sadhus only get by in north, because south, unless you're a sampradaya, they just don't buy it, you know. So you have to be a Shri, a Madhva, a Shankara, and there's no lady sadhus in the Shankaras, and or our line, like that, you know. So they won't buy that. But in north, you'll see. So they wear is bright red cloth. That's it. So that we don't wear, because that's what Shaktas wear. That's what it means. You know what I'm saying? Because you're a sadhu, so you pick up cloth off the ground. So if there's a bright red one, you don't pick that one up. You pick up something else. You know what I'm saying?
So as long as there are other colors or designs.
Yeah, but it's not prominently. It's not like a full red sari. Generally, you only wear for weddings, no? Like that. So no one ever wears a full red sari. But even that, it has the jari on it. It means no one will look at the Banarsi red silk sari and go, is she a Shakta? You know what I'm saying? No, no one will do that.
And then the dark blue, it stands for whom? Like the red stands for Shaktas, then dark
blue is because that's what Radharani wears. Because she wears it because that's what Krishna is. And Krishna wears yellow, gold, because that's what Radharani is. And Krishna wears, and Balaram wears blue because that's what Krishna is. But the thing is, because Balaram wears blue and Radharani wears blue, so if Krishna's chadar and Radharani's dupatta get mixed up and Krishna ends up with the blue dupatta, then Mother Jashoda will think it's Balaram's. So then that avoids any problems. Radharani has more of a problem because she's wearing gold and only Krishna wears gold. So Purnamasi has to say it's the morning light, the gold, you know, morning lights is making it look gold, you know, like that, and distract the attention. But.
Because the discussion has been that if a man wears like dark blue cardigan or whatever in the temple, it's like supremely offensive because Prabhupada.
Supremely. I love this. Do this. Do they wash their feet after they went in the bathroom and after eating? They do that, then we can talk these rules. Otherwise, why is it we'll talk about one and not the other?
Because in the Nectar of Devotion, Srila Prabhupada
stated. There's so many other things in the Nectar of Devotion is stated that I don't hear anybody talking about. Right? When the Nectar of Devotion opens, one of his things is those who are moralistic and you know, religionists should stop reading the book. It also says that. Blue is that specifically that sham blue that is the sorry, you know, so you're not going to do it. It's out of respect for Radharani. It's not that it's offensive. It's just that's what she wears, right? I mean, would you appreciate it if you came out in this sari and when you walked out of your room, then one of the other ladies here walked out wearing the exact same sari? Would you be comfortable?
Well, definitely not.
No. What if they were wearing not the same sari, but basically it had the same color kind of scheme, though it was a different pattern? Would you be comfortable? Wouldn't mind so much, but if you had something alternative, you might go back into your room and change.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So that's the point, because that's Radharani's color, that's why we don't wear it. You know what I'm saying? That's all. So it should be, you know, it's that color. So I wouldn't worry about a cardigan. I don't think she's worried about a blue cardigan. So generally it's the men wearing that red. Because you have the renunciates, so they might get that cloth, so they don't wear that. You know.
And regarding the gopi dresses, because like my understanding is at least what I've seen in India, this is either worn somewhere in Rajasthan by these like gypsies or local people, or in South India as what they call a half sari for unmarried girls, small girls. But like in nowadays India, like any married woman would never wear a gopi dress or anything like this because it's not considered high class. And so also there are tendencies like to completely abolish these gopi dresses from ISKCON and ISKCON temples, and then it's not bona fide at all. So what's the problem?
Well, the gagras means, as we said, is that means what is the sari?
Yeah, once I heard your seminar and I explained that this palu, this upper part, is actually considered.
Yeah, because the point is before is what you're wearing is the sari. You would have a gagra, and then this would be put on top of that. You ever looked at here?
Yeah.
So you see in the dupatta, you know, like let's say this front gopi, what color is it?
This pinkish one. This one is plain mridanga.
Yeah, but it's a slight lightest gold because you can hardly see them, right? But now, what's in the front of her gagra? Yeah, so now that is the dupatta. You understand? For us, the dupatta just ends right here. For them, it goes all the way down, and it's the like you have the pleats and the sari. So in other words, the sari that we're wearing is the gagra and the dupatta in one piece. Does that make sense? So whether it's in one piece or two piece, but it means it's worn in this way. So the gopi dress where it's worn how most wear, then that's more simplified. But it does basically it doesn't really matter. You know what I'm saying? Because the gagras, that's they're all wearing gagras there. You see it?
Yeah.
See, it started, go to the white one, you can see it more. You see it's folded in the front many, many times. Then it goes up around, and then it goes over the head and back down like that. So, in other words, what you would do with the sari, that back part, what's the gagra, that is the sari. So you're filling that out with a petticoat, right? Well, they may or may not have a petticoat because the amount of cloth that's in there, you notice all the folds, you know, that could be 20, 30, 40 meters of cloth. Does that make sense? So it's just, the point is that there's, the bottom is covered nicely and the top is covered nicely. And so then by having these longer things, you can do more with them. So like that. So that top part is called a sari. We call them dupattas now, but before they call them saris. So when they say Radharani wore a sari, it meant she was wearing a sari, but it also she's wearing the ghagra. So when our academics say that there's no mention of saris or dhotis, I'm sorry, there is. Just they learned Western University Sanskrit. Unfortunately, they never learned Sanskrit as our acharyas gave it. And they don't read that broader literature, so they don't have that much experience. Yes. Yeah, so it doesn't matter.
That's what I took.
Yeah, it's just a matter of how it works. But the thing is the sari is more formal than that gagra, unless the gagra is done like this. But that means you have a full, that what we would call the dupatta there, that's probably at least 3.5-4 meters. The one that goes all the way around like that, that'll be 4 meters. So they're wearing a gagra and a full sari. You understand? So these ones, it's that, you know, it means the dupatta is 2 meters long, and then the gopi dress, depending upon what kind it is, and it hardly has anything in it itself. So then that's the kind that's for the little girls or, you know, hanging around the house. But if you have the fuller ones where they have all the pleats in them like that, and the dupatta is big and long, then it doesn't matter. So it's just as formal. Does that make sense? Yeah. No other questions? Yeah. Well, that's fine. Okay. In the presence of his teacher, let him always eat less, wear a less valuable dress and ornaments than the former, and let him rise earlier from his bed and go to rest later. Right? In other words, he never tries to look better than the teacher. And he's always ready, because if he gets up earlier, he can do service. If he goes to bed later, he could have finished service. So the idea is always, he is always able to be engaged in service. Let him not answer or converse with the teacher reclining on a bed, nor sitting, nor eating, nor standing, nor with averted face. Let him do that standing up if his teacher is seated. Right? No, if the teacher is seated, you're standing. Advance towards him when he stands, going to meet him if he advances, and running after him when he runs. Going round to face the teacher if his face is averted, approaching him if he stands at a distance, but bending towards him if he lies on a bed and if he stands at a lower place. Right? So in other words, going to the teacher, you go around, you don't talk from behind, you go around and talk to his face, like that. And so then, if he's sitting, then you bend over or something that would be appropriate. Does that make sense? So it's like if you're sitting down and he talks, then you stand up. You know, if you're eating, you don't keep eating, you know, like that. You stop and then talk and then... So you do what is appropriate. Does that make sense?
The principle is to be accommodating to his movements, behavior.
Yeah.
Speech and not to be a nuisance.
Yeah, not to be a nuisance, but also to that one is, there's that element of respect, means you're doing something more. So if he's standing, you move towards him, right? You know, like that. If he's moving towards you, then you make that definite connection. You know, so whatever is going on, you're doing that something a little bit more just to, because one's in the position of servant. Is that okay?
Yeah. There is a situation that we are taking prasadam and suddenly our spiritual master or somebody very senior kind of like approaches us. So then what should we do? Like stop eating and stand up?
Then don't necessarily stand. You have to see the situation. Mm-hmm. Means if it's very formal in that, then you might stand up. But otherwise, the point is you stop eating and then give full attention. The idea is to be able to give full attention like that. And if they say, no, carry on eating like that, or if it's something very this and that, then you might stand up. You just see what they say. You know. But if it's not in prasad, then one would just stand up. That would be the element. When his teacher is near, let his bed or seat be low. Within the sight of his teacher, he shall not sit carelessly at ease. Right, so if they're in a situation where the teacher is always in the place where he is, then make sure his bed is low and simple or like this. And when the teacher's there, he shouldn't just like hang around like nobody's there. He should also be a little more formal. Right. So in general, that would mean that better that the place for the brahmacharis where they would, you know, sit and all that would be somewhere else so they could relax. But if there's no facility like that, then, you know, it doesn't matter. Let him not pronounce the mere name of the teacher without adding an honorific title, behind his back even, and let him not mimic his gait, speech, and deportment. Right? So you never copy and do something, especially if you're joking or anything like that. Like that. So the teacher is always, his name is always mentioned with somebody. You know, with some honor of title, say Srila Prabhupada, or you know, something will be said. You won't just say his name. Does that make sense? So that even goes to the point where sometimes you even avoid saying the name. Like that. Well, you know, we'll say Srila Prabhupada. We don't say, you know, Abhay Charan Aravinda, you know, Bhakti, like that. Some devotees like to do that, they feel it's more, but technically it's not. Like that. You know, this is also the reason that we don't just, you know, in kirtan, except on Radhastami, you know, chant Radhe Radhe and like things like that, because that's just the name. So we avoid that because we're not friends, we're servants. You know what I'm saying? We may have a conjugal relationship with Krishna, but we have a mood of servitorship towards Radharani. Does that make sense? Lord Chaitanya is a mood of servitorship. We're not friends, we're not this and that, we're servants. Right? Does that make sense? The conjugal relation is with Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's why we're careful about chatting Radharani's name. Yes?
But then in Kirtan, especially in Vrindavan, it's Radharada all the time. And it's like you meet and all the trees, it's Sri Radha.
But that's the Brajavasis. They do it, but it's nothing to do with us. They're in their own category. They're born there, they're special. We're not born there, so we're more careful. But if they say Radhe Radhe, you can say that. Okay, if you want to try that, but is your chanting of the name of Radha on that platform of Prema where he would consider that you've actually chanted the name of Radha? Or is your chanting the name of Radha because, you know, Krishna wants to hear it, so it's a rule, so therefore you're chanting in Vaidhi Bhakti according to your own definition, and so then that hearing the name of Radharani on the rag platform of that pure, unalloyed love is obtained by your chanting. You know what I'm saying? Always better to avoid trying those ones. You know, because... Have you ever noticed in the Hare Krishna mantra, which is the one who is there, what is the name?
Hare.
Yeah. So there is an element there. You have to remember, we are servants. Maid servant means what? We're buddy buddy. Hey, Roddy, what's happening? You know, we're servants in servitorship. You understand? That's what Raghunath Das says.
But if a bridge bossy or...
They can do whatever they like. We're not bridge bossies.
No, but if they, like, have some friends in Vrindavan, when they call me, they say, like, Radha Radha, should I say, like...
Yeah, you can say Hari Bol, say Hari Krishna. You can say Radha Radha if you want, but it's only because that... But you don't go around going Radha Radha, you know, like that. You don't do that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, but I'm just saying is you understand the principle. Someone who's been in Vrindavan forever, you know, if they do like this, then you don't worry about it. You know, like someone like Govinda Maharaj. Since the 70s, he was in Vrindavan, so the Brajbasis know him as one of them. So if he does like that, then that's a different thing. But, you know, all the Russians, they're not Brajbasis. You know what I'm saying? So one has to be careful about this. You know what I'm saying? You have to know what you're dealing with. The Brajbasis are different. Lord Chaitanya told Sanatana Goswami, don't mix too closely with the Brajbasis because they have a different method. They're born there, so they're from there. They're different. We're not. You understand? Radhisham, no, because when you say it with Krishna, that's fine. So you say Radhisham, that's fine. But when you say just on her own, Radhe Radhe, that's not very respectful.
Well, Jai Jai Shri Radhe, like this.
It's the same, it's kind of, but it's the same thing. It's kind of. You understand? Because we don't pick up the Brajbasi things. They have their method, we have ours. Yes.
One chance, Radha Radha's name, like Radha's name, not Radha Radha, like take shelter of Radha, I mean, like in a, just not in a mean, like I'm your friend, but just like take shelter.
If you can pull it off, but when you're walking down the street saying, Radha Radha, yeah, Radha Radha, you know, is that what's going on? Mm-hmm. So then that's, we have to, you know, the brahmacharis there in the kirtan, Jai Radha, hey, Jai Radha, you know, is that what's going on? I mean, they could be singing anything. If you want to stretch it, do whatever you like. You know, if you're just, you got to do this because somehow or another this is more important, more advanced, more special, more unique, do it. I'm not going to do it. Raghunath Das says that. You know, I offer my respects to your friendship, but I am your servant. So the Shakyis are their friends, others may be friends, great, but we're not. We're straight upfront servants. Servants don't say the name of their mistress. That's all. It's just the way it goes. You know what I'm saying? So if you want to do it, go for it. But we're talking about the general rule is it's avoided.
Yeah. Is it in a prayer?
If it's in a prayer by the acharyas, then you use it.
But like when you go to altar in front of Radha Shyam and you pray, then you use it like...
You can. You know what I'm saying? But the point is, yeah. It's just as long as it works, it's sincere. You know what I'm saying? Means our acharyas don't use it. You don't hear Prabhupada use it or anybody else.
And then Prabhupada, whenever he met somebody and somebody told him Jai Radha on the street, he said Hare Krishna.
Yeah.
Every single time.
Yeah, yeah. Because the point is, no one's going to complain.
And he was never chanting Jai Radha in the kirtan.
No. devotees were doing it one day in Krishna Bhavana. And Prabhupada said he can do it on Radhastami, and that because it's her day, and so you do it. It'll work on that day. But other than that, we generally don't. It's not that there's a problem with the name or this or that. It's just our etiquette, that's all. And as I mentioned, the Brajbasis do it like that. And therefore, I also made it very clear here is that someone like Govindamars that has been living there for the last 30 years or more, they are like if they were there when there was no other devotees and there's only them and the Brajbasis. So if they've picked up something, don't worry about it. You know, if Govindamars, you know, said Radha Radha does that all day, I'm not going to say anything. Like someone like Jayadvaitamars, he's really strict on kirtan. If someone does something funny in kirtan, he just walks out. There's no question. But all these things that are considered funny, if Govindamars is doing them, or Sri Prahlada is doing them, or, you know, a few devotees, Shivaram Maharaj or like that, then he has no problem because the mood is right. But if anyone else does it, bang, that nanosecond, he walks out. I've seen it myself. Like that. So it's just, understand is that this is the standard, and you'll have devotees that do like that, but they're in a different category. They're not doing it because it's some far-out thing and cool, and hey, let's do like what they're doing. This is just coming naturally, spontaneously from living there for the last, you know, since the 70s. Yeah, he'll do it. Well, then also you have so many of these ones that were used in the earlier days in India. Some of them you don't even hear anymore. You know, like Brahma Bole Panchamukhe, Krishna Krishna Hare Hare, Rama Bole Panchamukhe, Rama Rama Hare, like this, I can't even remember it. But it was something, you'd hear that. And there was a whole things like that. Gornityananda bol, Hari bol, Gorshri Advaita bol, Hari bol, like this. You'd have all these ones. They're standard ones, devotees would use them, but they're not so important. But if they were used properly, no big deal. The discussion comes up when they're used as trick, you know, okay, you know, this big Swami did this at this big festival, it was really ecstatic, so now we'll do it at our little kirtan and somehow or another it'll make it ecstatic. And if it worked, great. But most of the time it sounds like they're just copying. The point is that they did it that time, it worked. They won't do it at another time. So that's the point. There's a certain level of just these things come.
Like Swami in Padayatra in Czech, he was chanting only Hare Krishna there.
Yeah.
And when he comes to Mayapur,
he chanted all kinds of things. But the thing is cause, you know, he's from, you know, a village, you know, that grew up, that they've been doing kirtan his whole life. So it's not like it's a new thing doing kirtan since he joined ISKCON, you know. You know, he was, when I met him, he was the head pujari in Bombay. And then Prabhupada gave him sannyas from there, but he was the head pujari. Yeah, so you have to also, there's the individual, you know. You know, it's like, what is his name? They forget what his name was. One of Lord Nityananda's associates, he'd go up to tigers and slap them in the face and stuff like that. So does that mean now we go, the brahmacharis, hey, cool, hey, let's try this out. No, it's just, you know, certain people can do certain things and just leave it that it's special for them. That's it. You know, they can do it, great. Others, don't bother. You know, do what's natural for you. It's just like Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj, and it was very good kirtanier. So devotees ask, so should we, you know, do kirtan like he does? And Prabhupada says, no. It says you do your own style. It doesn't mean you make something up. It means that you don't have to copy him. You know, does that make sense? Like in you know, some devotees that can exactly, I remember being in a kirtan once where Chutananda was leading the kirtan. And then he turned to somebody next to him, one of the other swamis, and says, who is that? Because he would go through all these different kind of things because he was, you know, always making jokes. And so he said, who is that? They said, that was you, a Chutananda. He says, no, it wasn't. That was me imitating Madhavananda, imitating Achyutananda. Like that, you know, so he'd do stuff like that. So like in Mayapur, every day we hear Sri Prahlad's kirtan. No, there's a devotee there that exactly sings just like him. Even down to the, you know, the whole album, you know, exactly what he did where and all that and like that. But it works for him. But if anybody else tried it, it's you always hear somebody else trying it and it always comes out a little weird. So that's the whole point, is that one has to be sensitive that what is the situation, how did that work and stuff like that. Okay. Whenever people justly censure or falsely defame his teacher, he must cover his ears or depart thence to another place. Even here it says justly censure. It's not his business to listen. That's between them and the teacher. By censuring his teacher, though justly, this is called the student, he will become in his next birth an ass, means a donkey. By falsely defaming him, a dog, he who lives on the teacher's subsistence will become a worm, and he who is envious of his merit, a large insect. Yeah, you get him here. I don't know if you see him as much here, but in Mayapur we have these overly large bugs. There's one this big we call B-52. They're actually a water bug. You know, these big pinchers and big wings, and they because they're water bugs, they can fly or they can swim, but they can't walk. Not very nice. So they get on the veranda and they sit there on their back and go zzz, like this. And then you have another one, it's about this big, these huge long legs like this, but they're like square. They're perfectly like a box, you know? And we call them jeeps because they got the lights, eyes right on the front. And they run along and then they hop like this and that. So these are examples of large bugs. He must not serve the teacher by the invention of another while he himself stands aloof, right? So some of the wording here went funny. In other words, when someone else is doing service and you've finished yours and you just stand around and watch, that doesn't work. It means you help them do theirs. Like that. In other words, the brahmachari always serves. If there's service to do, he helps with it. Like that. He doesn't stand around because, oh, I finished mine, you know, like that. No, they always work together and make sure everything's done. Like that. Nor when he himself is angry. Like if you're totally angry, then you don't do the service. Like don't try to serve prasad or do something if you're upset and about, because you won't focus, you won't do it properly. Nor when a woman is near, right? Because the problem is then he'll be, you know, seeing if she is thinking that he's doing a great job. Mm-hmm. If he's seated on a carriage or in a raised seat, he must descend and afterwards salute his teacher. Right? So if he's on a higher level, when the teacher comes, then he'll get down from that. Just like if he's on a lower level, he'll stand up. Oh, here's another thing he mentioned here. Nor when a woman is near. Means when the teacher's with his wife, then you don't come in to render all kinds of service. No, she's the one that's running service. Because if you're going to do something in that occasion, it has to be what she's telling you to do. But otherwise, when the teacher's with his wife, then, you know, is in privately, then you stay out of the way. That's the principle. Because otherwise, in that private situation, service is under her control. So you can't come in independently and do something. You know, unless it's expected. You've been told to do it, but otherwise you don't. Let him not sit with his teacher to the leeward or to the windward of him. Nor let him say anything which his teacher cannot hear. Okay, the leeward, I can't remember, I should have. Downwind. Okay, in other words, don't sit downwind from the teacher, because when you talk, the wind will carry what you're saying away, he can't hear what you're saying. And, or to the windward, not you're above wind of him. Does that make sense? So in other words, you sit how you say, perpendicular to the wind. You know, never sit in line with the wind, because then you can't, one way, you won't be able to hear the conversation. Like that. He may sit with his teacher in a, so these are the places where you can sit on the same level as the teacher. He may sit with his teacher in a carriage drawn by oxen, horses, or camels, right? So therefore your cars are no problem because they have horsepower, like that. On a terrace, on a bed of grass or leaves, on a mat, on a rock, on a wooden bench, or in a boat. Right? In other words, where there isn't somewhere else to sit, then you sit in the same level. Not that you're in the car, so you sit on the floor in the car like that. I've seen devotees do that, but you know, like that. But you know, in other words, these things, there aren't other places, so therefore, you know, you just sit together. If his teacher's teacher is near, let him behave towards him as towards his own teacher. But let him, unless he has received permission from his teacher, not salute venerable persons of his own family. Right? So when the teacher's teacher is near, one will deal with him just like the teacher. But if your own family members who are respectable, like your parents and that, then only with your teacher's permission do you respect the teacher, respect the parents. You know, that's just the rule, because the teacher is the superior. Unfortunately, parents will consider, because I'm the father, you have to respect the father, and then the brahmacharis are there with the teacher, and then if they don't leave and come over, then that's not good, and you know, what is this? And they're missing the point, is that yes, they are, but they have to have the permission of the teacher. So taking the permission, then they go and respect. But if for some reason the teacher doesn't give, then you don't. Like that. Okay. Towards his betters, let him always behave as towards his teacher. Likewise, towards the sons of his teacher, born by wives of equal caste, and towards the teacher's relatives on both sides of the father and the mother. So, you know, in other words, the teacher and anyone connected to the teacher, he deals with properly like the teacher. The son of the teacher who imparts instructions in his father's stead deserves the same honor as the teacher, whether younger or of equal age, or a student of the science of sacrifices or other angas. Right, so in other words, when he's teaching and giving instruction, he's dealt with just like a teacher. But it says here, student must not shampoo the limbs of his teacher's son or assist him in bathing, nor eat the fragments of food, nor wash his feet. In other words, those elements of worship are not done towards the son of the teacher, or necessarily towards those relatives of the teacher. Those are just for the teacher. Does that make sense? So there's a difference here. But when he's teaching you what the teacher would teach you at that time, you deal with him like the teacher. Let him not perform for a wife of his teacher the offices of anointing her, assisting her during bath, shampooing her limbs, or arranging her hair. A pupil who is fully 20 years old and knows what is becoming and unbecoming shall not salute a young wife of his teacher by clasping her feet. Right. So how do you say? Yeah, it means if he's fully older, he won't go and touch your feet and stuff like that. He'll offer obeisances from a distance. But if he's young, so he's like a child, then he goes up, touches her feet, that's fine. Like that. So there is this differentiation there in the age. Okay, now we get into the fun one. It is the nature of women to seduce men in this world. For that reason, the wise are never unguarded in the company of females. For women are able to lead astray in this world not only a fool, but even a learned man, and to make him a slave of desire and anger. One should not sit in a lonely place with one's mother, sister, or daughter, for the senses are powerful and master even a learned man. Right? That one probably quotes that one. So the point is it's, you're dealing with potencies here. Right? As we were saying before when we were opening the discussions, is you're dealing with potencies. So these potencies are there, is that attractive principle, that natural attraction between the male and female. So those are there, and that's Krishna and his internal potency interacting on the principal platform, in primary creation's universal form. But we identify as that controller and enjoyer, and so we try to take that masculine role or that feminine role, when actually we're just servants of it. Right? So if we're servants, then we're involved in the way of whatever is the appropriate service for us in that situation. Then there's no problem. But if we take it that we're the controller and enjoyer, then we can get distracted by that. Does that make sense? So therefore, then one should always be very careful. So that answers your point here, because it says mother, sister, daughter. So one should be very careful. Right? Because you're saying about friendship. So you're asking the, how you say, the eternal Harry meets Sally, can men and women be have a platonic relationship? Right? So here they warn that one should be very careful. Right? But at his pleasure, a young student may prostrate himself on the ground before the young wife of a teacher in accordance with the rule and say, I, you know, such and such, worship thee. On returning from a journey, he must clasp the feet of his teacher's wife and daily salute her in the manner just mentioned, remembering the duty of the virtuous. So if he's coming back from a distance, he's been away, so he come back, he'll offer his respects. And then on a daily basis, he will. So it means he'll make that effort. Like we see Krishna, before he would leave, then, you know, he would, you know, all these things. Then he would go into the inner apartments and then say goodbye to the women, because there's that closeness, that relationship. Then he would go out, and then there would be the formal leaving, right? Because ladies don't say goodbye in the formal environment. They say goodbye in a private environment. Does that make sense? So the same way as here, he's come back from a journey, it's not the formal. The formal is there, but he's come back, so there's been some time, so then he offers his respects.
Just to go a little back, what was spoken here about the world is better, so that the way behave towards teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Mention here like relatives of the teachers and so on, and teachers like that. How can we see this in ISKCON? Can we?
Means if the guru has relatives, then, you know, like Jayapataka Maharaj's mother is there, you're nice to her. Like that. But because there's a difference between respecting and worshiping. So also this is, you know, part of the Western disease of lack of social, ability to distinguish. So therefore, if it's respect means it's worship, so the next thing we're out there doing puja to his mother. No, that's not necessary. One is just respectful, so one takes care, one deals nicely, one interacts nicely, like that. That's what's required. Yes?
So, but it wouldn't apply like in the sense of a spiritual family that
no.
The teacher has a, you know, brother, like that's the godbrother of the teacher.
No, but that's theirs because of the generation. They're a senior generation. But otherwise, if your guru's of the same generation, then that wouldn't apply. Then it would just be that they're senior by, you know, age or time or things like that, because it's not. Does that make sense? Okay. I think, do we finish this section? Okay, last point here. As a man who digs with a spade into the ground obtains water, even so an obedient pupil obtains the knowledge which lies hidden in his teacher. Right? So if someone is obedient, has that service attitude, has the right culture, right respect, then whatever knowledge is in the teacher, he'll be able to gain. And if he's not, he won't. Like that. So that's the element. It's the right attitude, like we see, is that, I think it was Gotama's son. I think it was Gotama, maybe it was someone else. Unless it was Bharadvaj. One of their sons then was very intelligent. He went, you know, Gurukul learned from the teacher. But because he was very proud of his knowledge, his intelligence, the teacher never taught him the rahasyas, the hidden portions of the work. So he just knew the mantras perfectly. He knew their rituals, you know, their, you know, grammatical explanations, all these things, you know, even better than others. So one time, you know, after he had graduated, then there was one king was having a big sacrifice. So then the Brahmins go, you know, there'll be charity, there'll be discussions. You know, there's always, because the sacrifice means that you're doing when you're doing the ritual, then that's what goes on. But in between, the gaps between rituals, that's when you're doing, how you say? They have discussions. So that's where like the Mahabharata is discussed and, you know, so many of these, at the intervals of the Yajna at Naimisharanya, that's where Bhagavatam is discussed. And does that make sense? You know, all these different, like that. So then boy showed up, and you know his father's a great sage, and he's known for being very intelligent, you know, and very knowledgeable. So the king started asking about spiritual knowledge, about the soul, and because he hadn't been taught it because of his arrogance, then he didn't even know there was such a topic. So he got very upset, you know, because he thought that the king was like playing with him, you know, asking an irrelevant question. So he left. And then he came back, you know, to the house. And then his father, so how was the yajna? Oh, yeah, useless and all that. And says, why? Says, well, the king, you know, he's very arrogant and he doesn't respect the Brahmins and he talks all kinds of nonsense. And Gautama is thinking, well, you know, he's known as a great king, religious, and very knowledgeable in the science of, you know, in devotion and all these different things. So then he said, so what was he saying? What is this nonsense he was speaking? So then his son related the questions. So from the questions asked, Gautama could understand that he knew more about the science than they did. You know, though he was trying to get farther, but his advancement in that knowledge was greater than what they had. So, yeah, so he and then the other sages who were there listening, then they all got up and went to the assembly. And they picked up firewood, because carrying firewood means you're willing to do service, right? Because you're willing to do sacrifice. So then they came and, you know, the king gave audience and how can I help you, great sages? And it says, we've come to, you know, become your student. He says, why? You're sages? I'm a kshatriya. What is it? So he says, no, but you know the knowledge of the soul. Like that. So he invited them. They became his guests and that. So he would take care of them as, you know, Brahmins and everything like that. He says, I won't be your teacher, but I will share with you what I know. So that, you know, then at times they would sit and he would discuss and everything like that. So you do get that people don't know something because of the lack of their arrogance. So that's what I'm saying here. If he has that obedience, then he can attain what's hidden. Otherwise, he won't. Like that. Okay, so end here. Continue tomorrow with hair and sleeping. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktabrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi. Jai.